Neighborhood Voice explores community issues through the lens of local residents. We've spent time talking with entrepreneurs about their experiences running small businesses and how they've adapted during the pandemic. Now we're getting local perspectives on COVID-19, the vaccine, and barriers to accessing it. I'm your host, Erica Pfizer, and this week I'm joined by Marcus Martin, founder and executive director of Grace Beyond Borders. Thank you for joining me, Marcus. How are you today?
Super great, super busy, and grateful and honored to be able to be on the show today. Well, and I appreciate you giving me this opportunity.
And I appreciate you being on. And homelessness is an issue that affects so many people. It's kind of it's sometimes seen, but I think a mostly unseen problem in a lot of our communities. So can you talk more about the work of Grace Beyond Borders and what you're doing in East Chicago and the surrounding communities?
Certainly. First of all, I said 2013. But prior to 2013, I worked with our outreach ministry in Chicago, which really opened up a whole new view and revelation of homelessness. And it was there I was trained from 2001 until 2019. So I encountered a lot of homelessness. But in 2013, I came here. I began to explore East Chicago. This is a calling on my life to really look at the homeless situation. And the homelessness does not look the same in Northwest Indiana as it does in East Chicago. Mm-hmm. In Chicago, Illinois. Well, you can kind of see it on the streets and you see people panhandling. But in Northwest Indiana, you didn't see the person sleeping behind Long John Silver restaurant, did you?
No.
You didn't see the person, the woman in her car, utilizing the outdoor outlet behind a business in Hammond, did you?
Nope.
Where she plugged in her heater and also mm-hmm. her charger for her phone. You don't see the individuals who are in the abandoned houses. But we find out that's what we call our invisible neighbors. Mm. And 2013 to 2018, we found over 70 locations where our homeless population would stay at night, abandoned garages. And I like one where a woman slept in her vehicle, but she would park in the parking lot of the hospital because they have security there. Mm-hmm. And she felt safer there than parking on the streets like many of them do. And a number of families will park in the travel along the toll road. There are travel centers there, and people stay overnight there. So we began to see this invisible population and really began to reach out. But that's where we began to see, because each time they come to one of our events, we would do a survey. That was the entry into the event. We had mm-hmm. movie days. Mm-hmm. They loved them. We had movie days because there's no movie theaters in East Chicago. So we would have the popcorn. We actually had a popcorn machine. And we would have, you know, the nachos and cheese with the homemade chili. And we would have the cookies. I mean, the people loved it, the hot beef hot dogs. So people would come out for that, but to get in, you would have to fill out a survey.
It was free. Your only admission was to fill the survey.
Complete the survey. And when they completed that, one of the questions we had on the survey is, where did you sleep last night? And some of the answers really would break your heart. Some of the conditions that people were staying in or felt, you know, in hallways of apartment buildings. So I began to take photos. I began to log in all these different locations where people were staying overnight. And I don't know if you remember in November 2018, actually November 8th, 2018, at a press conference on the gazebo of City Hall Park in East Chicago, with NBC and ABC News there and the local TV, where I announced that I would be staying overnight in 30 different locations, not only in East Chicago, but also Chicago, Hammond, just to just to begin to bring awareness to what was going on and also to raise dollars.
Yeah, so you wanted to put yourself in the experience of being homeless, not just to interact with people who may be homeless, but to experience it firsthand.
Yes. So in that process of staying overnight, for example, under a bridge in East Chicago by a railroad track, I said, well, I would stay overnight there. I think Veterans Day was that Monday. I said, this would be a good time. I said, probably won't be that many trains coming through during the night or early morning. And boy, was I wrong. I was wrong. But a Navy veteran stayed in that location. That's how we learned about it. Mm-hmm. And he has his own apartment now and for a few years. We provided to make sure he had furniture and things like that through the giving of other people. So, but staying overnight there, could you imagine? You're lying on the ground. You're on the ground. It's cold. This is November. Mm-hmm. And you might doze off to sleep, and all of a sudden a train comes through. I mean, just the experience of the thundering and the ground, the vibration on the ground. And you waking up out of a sleep, I thought the train had actually derailed and I was getting ready to get crushed.
Because of how the noise and the vibration around you. And that's not something that you can, that's something that you have to experience. It's not something that you can understand fully, I think, just by someone recounting it to you.
You can't. And I said, how in the world did this person stay that length, those months in this condition? Mm-hmm. And it just boggled my mind. One night was on the CTA Red Line train. How did that come about? Well, they would teach me, you working with the homeless, where you sleep at last night? They said, on the train. I said, on the train. They said, yeah, we stay on the train all night. So the thing was to ride the shuttle bus from the casino over to 22nd Cermak in Chicago, and one block away was a Red Line train station. So I did that. It's nighttime, no one's around, and I'm up on the platform by myself waiting for the train to come through. Mm-hmm. So I can ride it from north to south all night. That night I saw more mental illness, more people who were sleeping on the train. There were carloads with the doors closed. In fact, when we arrived at North, they said everybody must exit. And it was only myself and one other person, everybody else staying on the train. And then I'm looking for the train that's going back south, and all the doors are closed. And I'm looking in, people are just asleep, sitting or lying down. I'm like, it crushes your heart to see that this condition exists. And there are no restrooms, which has given the CTA Red Line train the nickname of Dirty Red.
I didn't know that.
Yes. And I was prepared because someone that rode the Red Line train said, no, there's not going to be any restroom, so you got to stop over at Millennium. And I didn't realize Millennium Station did not connect with the train, and I'm going to have to walk a few blocks. Those long Chicago mm-hmm. blocks are like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, in the middle of winter.
I made it, but I'm just saying that's the kind of situations that you encounter because nothing's open at night. You have to panhandle. If you have any money because you need to use the restroom, you have to panhandle and get the money so you can go in because you have to buy something in order to use the restroom.
Now, did you try to panhandle as well?
No, no. I've never tried that. Mm-hmm. I've thought about it though. When I saw some of the nice tents over there on Canalport in Chicago, when you get off the exit there and you got all these beautiful tents, I said, bikes and everything. It's just a thought.
No. So what would be? So I know you did this over an extended period of time.
30 nights.
Mm-hmm. 30 nights. So what takeaway did you have from all 30 of these nights? Is there one? Now I know there are a few situations, but is there something that connected all of these situations that you were in, or the people that you were meeting? Did something overarching that stuck with you?
Then I understood the behavior. when you are sleep deprived. I never got a full night of sleep. You're sleep deprived, irritated, then begin to understand some of the behavior I would see from people.
Mm-hmm.
I had a woman that we had assisted and done a lot for her in the office, and my case manager says, you know, you need to talk with her because she's... So I came in, I said, well, what's going on? She was real disrespectful and things, and I said, hold on, wait, you know. So we're talking, I said, well, help me understand. She says, I'm wet and I'm cold. Because it had been raining. She had stayed up all night. I said, I understand.
Yeah, that would make most of us irritable. Mm-hmm. Maybe short with our answers. Mm-hmm.
So the patience that's required, you know, understood better in terms of, you know, making sure just even to be more patient with the individuals. And understanding, ask questions so that they can share what they're dealing with. And, you know, they may share, well, hey, this is the situation and this is why I need this, or this is why I don't want this particular thing. Okay, then we understand. But the challenge in doing that helped raise the dollars that I needed. It was kind of an unorthodox method of raising money, but it did raise significant dollars to the point that I was able to utilize it for a down payment for a building that we now have, that we are preparing for our women with and without children.
And that center is in East Chicago. Can you give me the cross streets or the address of that?
Yes, cross streets are Euclid Avenue near the main street, Euclid Avenue and Chicago Avenue, 1207 East Chicago Avenue, former Medical Dialysis Center. And we were just thrilled to be able to get that building. But again, we had to raise the dollars that came from a couple of foundations, but also individual, everyday people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what drives a lot that we do, is just our individual, everyday people. We have donors that give $5 every month. You can count on that $5 is coming in every month, others 10. I got some $100 every month. They're going to send it. Sometimes they'll double it as they hear the stories that are going on. So we're grateful for every one of those donors. And in September, we had a labor of love. We had a volunteer who coordinated an event, Sade Cadiskill. I gave her a tour of the building just to tell me what colors we need to paint. Because, you know, being a medical dialysis, and it was all the same color throughout, institutionalized. They had a banner running all the way around through the whole building. It was all the same color. And I said, Sade, you're in the arts. I said, what color do you think we can have for the rooms? And she was excited. But she says, can I bring in some volunteers to help? I said, yes. Well, 75 volunteers later, and 7 churches in the community came in, and they transformed that building. And
so what did they paint? Did they paint a mural, different artworks? Or
no, the artwork hasn't been done yet, but they painted the rooms. Mm-hmm. And you'll see all the different colors. And, you know, people walk in, and it's something to see when they see I like this color here. And we had a young group, a top 20 group, come in. And they volunteered to help put some of our bags. I didn't bring the bag with me, did I? But they put together what we call our hygiene bags and our snack bags. And so they have a mask, deodorant, toothpaste, toothbrush holder, soap, and also we'll have hand sanitizer, bottle hand sanitizer and wipes. And so they sit there diligently putting that together, and then we gave them the tour. They were just so excited about the building. Oh, I want to stay here. They wanted to stay. But that's the kind of gifts we have. Faith Church in Highland, their men's group, they came in and just done a remarkable thing. And Kim Kreischel, who formerly worked with Home Depot, came in and just really took it to another level. And did you hear about our recent donation of bunk beds?
I didn't.
We had the rooms all set up, but there were single beds. And I kept saying, I really want bunk beds and what we call the family rooms. It's 2 family rooms for the mom and her children. I said, we really need bunk beds. But the bunk beds we had to convert the beds was too high to the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, we can't do that. But I realized and found out they had lower, you know, bunk beds are a lot lower. So Kim Kreischel, our building and resource developer, just contacted Sleep in Heavenly Peace out of Illinois. They're a national company, organization that makes sure that children have beds. They came in on Monday. And I'm going to say in less than an hour, they had put together three brand new bunk beds, mattresses, linen, blankets, pillows. It's just a phenomenal, phenomenal sight to see. We posted on Facebook. But now, I mean, it's just a comfort level to know that a child can feel safe. It's a lot of hazards and a lot of unsafe situations for children who are caught up in the homelessness.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
And it's very critical to change, intervene in that situation, but keeping the family together also is critical. And we have that capacity just for a couple of families right now, which is not enough. But we work with partners. We work with other missions and shelters so that we can make sure that we can get them into these places.
Now, but there aren't a lot of shelters in the area, right? Yours is one of only a handful or a few in the Northwest Indiana area. Do you know of other? I know there's the women. There's a women's, couple of women's shelters, but that would keep the family unit together, or how's?
Yes, very few, very limited, and the beds. It's just not enough beds for to address that issue, and you know, during time. We need something larger, but the ongoing problem with the homelessness is critical, especially during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen a lot of, you know, we had the moratorium on evictions, but we have a great case manager, Dr. Sylvia Monaghan, who really helped intervene in some of those situations when people were getting ready to be evicted.
Mm-hmm.
And just the rental assistance that's needed, but everything is so spread out, people, if you don't have transportation to access those resources, you're in trouble.
And do you help people access those resources when they come to the center?
Yes. Yes. That's the key thing in that we provide a hand up out of this situation, not just hand out, you know, giving out handouts. That's critical. They get a lot of handouts, but they never get out of their situation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're focused on helping them move out of their situation into independence in a better place, because we found out that's going to be better for the entire community when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be more productive when they're able to be more in a more stable and safe situation. So we just had a recent situation where a family of three became homeless, but they're all adults. Two adults are disabled and the mom's taking care of them, but they became unexpectedly homeless. So we had to work with them. We made sure, one, they had a place to stay. This is the hotel. We utilize, through our 365 program, we're able to provide hotel stays for them until we can get them into a place.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people get the hotel vouchers, and they'll stay in a hotel, and then they'll call us, do you have some more hotel vouchers? Okay, but what are you doing all that time? Who are you working with?
Mm-hmm.
We don't just put people in the hotels. We work with them while they're there. They have to make phone calls. We're working on our end to find them a place so that once they're out of that hotel situation and move from that lodging there into a place. So that's what happened with this family. And now they're in a safe, you know, they have their own place now.
And they're in a safe environment now with the assistance that they received from your organization.
Mm-hmm. During COVID, when COVID hit last year, actually, I signed the papers, the mortgage loan, February 28, 2020, went through the zoning, got approval for that, and was awaiting the council meeting. That's when COVID, that's when the shutdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shortly after that.
But this is the impact on the homeless. Now, this shutdown hit, services are stopped. I just felt in my spirit, we got to go out there.
Mm-hmm.
So for 7 straight days, from March to July, we provided breakfast every morning to individuals that were homeless or food insecure who wanted a meal. We provided breakfast, working with McDonald's in East Chicago, we. And through a grant from Legacy, we were able, Legacy and Foundations of East Chicago, we were able to purchase the meals and make sure that people had something to eat. And during that time was critical because there was kind of an unsafe situation because we're not sure about how this COVID is mm-hmm. spreading. And so I had to really set some boundaries with people and lining up. The CDC guidelines, social distance and mask, hand sanitizer. So we provided clean masks every day, wipes for their hands. We made sure they had hand sanitizer. They had the meal. But we required them to be spaced as they lined up. We had some difficulties with some.
Sure.
But we worked with it because we wanted overall to make sure that they were safe and then they didn't create an unsafe situation for other people. So for 124 days, we were able to provide that to the people. And to beyond that, we really reach out to make sure that people have something to eat, not just for the special occasion. Thanksgiving time comes, and that's a critical time because people want to provide meals.
But that's a time when generally a lot of companies and organizations are doing things around Thanksgiving or the holidays in general. But all the other days of the year, people are still hungry.
They still have
and
to
you're
eat.
providing them.
And a homeless person doesn't have refrigeration mm-hmm. for their meals. If they get leftovers or they get an extra meal, they don't have the proper refrigeration. Of course, if it's cold enough outside or whatever, they're in a situation, they will be able to. But I'm just saying that they have to eat. And we try to provide services 365 days a year. Last year was a leap year, so it was 366 days. Mm-hmm. But our 365 program, we just ask people to donate $3,065 a month to provide one meal. If you want to provide 10 meals, then $36.50 each month will do that. $365 will provide some emergency services for them. And $3,650 will provide a safe, some shelter, the meals, and the things that they're going to need. So that's, we use that 365 a little bit long and higher too, but that's what we do in terms of that. So we're able to raise money through our 365 program through our text give. And we're able to, when we collect those dollars, we're able to make sure that they get to the people that need these services.
Thanks, Marcus. Can you give us your website address so people, if they want to give through your website, where can they visit you?
Mm-hmm. And the website is www.grace.com. Beyond Borders with the S on the end of it .org, and if they want to text, they can text the word give, G-I-V-E, to 219-312-2083, and they can go visit on and see a lot of what we do on Facebook at Grace Beyond Borders. They'll just see, they can view all those 30 nights, the videos that the Facebook Live videos that I was able to record, and see a lot of the other things, the events that are going on that we are actively involved in. And even if you go in there now, you'll hear two stories, one from Marcella and one from Pam.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for being here this week.
I'm grateful, and again, for this opportunity, and appreciate it.
You can visit OurShot219.com for information about local COVID-19 resources in Northwest Indiana. This show is made possible by Legacy Foundation, the Community Foundation for Lake County, Indiana.